Blog Talk Radio.
Patreon Vocal Journal, Van Sangai and QT here with you on another Sunday afternoon. A couple of show notes. First of all, happy Easter to all the listeners out there. Hope you enjoy the Easter holiday. KDW running this week in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Also tonight, NWA Blue Collar up in our neck of the woods in Portland, Oregon, also running. So if you're looking for some wrestling after the Easter festivities, check out some local independent wrestling. Without further ado, our guest has joined us, so I would like to welcome to the show Sexy Sean Casey. Mr. Casey, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? Thank you very much.
Doing very well. Now, our first question that we like to ask people when they are on our show for the first time: how did you get involved in the professional wrestling industry?
You know, it was just something that when I was a little kid, I used to watch it on TV. Back in those days, it was Georgia Championship Wrestling, and I just grew up idolizing a lot of the guys and just would miss it. I remember when VCRs first came out, they were on beta, and they had the little timer on them, and that's you were able to, set the timer so you didn't miss it. And if I would forget or something and we were gone, I would just have a fit that, I wasn't going to get to see wrestling that week. So just something I grew up with.
Now, when you were first starting in the industry, did you have a particular background as far as athletics went or any type of background that would have prepared you for a career in professional wrestling?
I did some wrestling in junior high and in high school. And then, of course, I played football, and bicycle motocross was real big when I was a kid. And, I was always pretty into sports and things like that. But it's funny because the whole rock scene, that whole era and everything was real big, in the 80s and then in the early 90s. And that's just something that these guys look like, all the guys were like rock stars, but, they're professional wrestlers. So it was just a rock and roll with a twist kind of.
One of the promotions where you've appeared at different times throughout your career has been Ohio Valley Wrestling. It's been linked to both WWE and TNA as a developmental formally. They've turned out a lot of really big-name talents. You've been there a few different times. What's been your opinions on Ohio Valley Wrestling over the years?
Ohio Valley Wrestling in this area, and even if you venture out, out of the Midwest, I don't really know of a whole lot of stuff that carries the clout and has the professionalism and the talent that has been through there and is still there in OVW, Danny Davis owning it. And you've had Paul Heyman was down there as the booker for a while back in the, I believe it was like 2003 to maybe 2006, 2007, something like that. And that was when CM Punk was there and John Morrison and a handful of other different people come through there. And then originally Jim Cornette was in charge of everything down there. And as of, the past, probably 3 or 4 years, off the top of my head, Al Snow's been there. So, and Al's always been like a mix of what I always said. He's got the Southern mentality, the Southern psychology, like a Jim Cornette. And then he has that East Coast mentality like Paul Heyman. And if you take that and you blend that together, that's Al Snow's brain with his own twist on it. So there's so much knowledge there with Al that you can gain, you know, in the wrestling business from old and of new. But that's just an example of the great minds that have been through there and the talent. The first time I was there was in the end of 1999, and that was right before they had got Brock Lesnar and Batista and John Cena. And I think I was there maybe about 5 or 6 months, and then those guys started showing up. Randy Orton, Mark Henry came down there, Paul White was there. Just a list of names that go on and on, along with some of Danny Davis' standouts, like Eugene, Nick Densmore, and Rob Conway, of course, and just a host of many other, what I would say, Danny's guys. But just really, really a phenomenal facility. And that last time that they had the developmental with WWE, WWE had sunk some money into the place. And so they got a whole new Davis studio there. And really, really nice. The original place that we were in, though, was something. Somebody was just asking me about that. And that produced probably the best talent, which was when it was John Cena, when it was Batista. And literally, it was inside of a warehouse. And it was, they had one fan in the building. The dressing room was just the smallest little hole in the wall back room that everyone changed in. And Danny Davis's studio for production was a couple of VCRs side by side and some mixing equipment. And it's just, it's amazing the quality of talent. They were never pampered. Those guys actually really, really earned their spot. There was nothing fancy about the training center for them or anything like that. But then, like I said, you know, in the early 2000s, then they got the new Davis Arena. It's really, really nice. But the guys are almost spoiled now. Now in Tampa, you know, they have WWE has a training facility for developmental, and they have their own little mini arena, and they have the training center there, and they have all this different stuff. So, you know, the guys have everything almost handed to them that should turn out the best stars WWE's ever had. And if you look back at music and things like that, sometimes that old school mentality and the old school methods seem like it produced the best music. So far, it's produced the best wrestlers I think WWE has saw in the last two decades.
One of the things that wrestlers have used as a tool over the years to try to get exposure, and it seems like it's maybe not as important, but it's still out there for independent wrestlers to try to get their name out, is Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It's still on the market, still available. Independent wrestlers do get coverage in it. What do you think in this day and age Pro Wrestling Illustrated can do for a young independent wrestler trying to get his name out there?
I think things like that is just it's just so well respected for over all these years. And anything that you can get your name tagged to, especially something like Pro Wrestling Illustrated, carries a lot of weight also. But, you know, things are a little different than all the way back from when I was talking about with these guys in the late 90s and that. There's so much social media in that. And if guys market themselves good and they follow up on everything and stay on that, that's such a great tool now for guys to be able to get their name out there that, you know, it wasn't once there. You had to you know, you had to almost be rumored and carry its own weight just from word of mouth to be able to market yourself and have your name out there. In the late 90s, there wasn't no social media. It had to be promoters and fans talking about you to create any kind of hype and people, you know, buying, selling, and trading VCR tapes and things like that of you. But now, you know, with YouTube and everything, you can get your own footage of all your stuff up there. And if you promote things right, and that's an art in itself. Some of these guys do very, very well with social media, and it's makes it so much easier. And it really is a good tool. And it's a great time for the independent scene now because this is something else I was just discussing with somebody. We were at a show in Clarksburg, West Virginia last night, and years ago, and I'm talking, gosh, you know, decade and a half ago, 2 decades ago, they weren't really interested in guys that look like indie guys. So it made it very, very hard. You know, people like Vince McMahon was only interested in hiring 6 foot or taller, jacked up bodybuilders, and he thought that was the only thing that was marketable, and it was the only thing he was going to sink money into, and the only thing he was interested in. And people like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and guys like that have shown that there's a market for it, and it's really opened up the door for a lot of indie guys, I think.
I would agree with that. Now, you've competed in several different states through your career. A lot of states have an athletic commission. Some of them do not. What's your opinions on state athletic commissions as it pertains to wrestling, just in a general sense?
You know, I don't once upon a time here, I had a little run-in with the Kentucky Athletic Commission over medication I was getting from a doctor, and they wanted to suspend me, and I think they left me sitting out for 3 or 4 months until we were able to meet with the board and this and that, and they finally come to the agreement that if you're being seen by a doctor for anything, that it would be okay. And I just thought that was ridiculous. And I know I was told a story in the past that the Kentucky Athletic Commission was so bad that WWE had pulled out for a little while. There's big fines and this and that. If somebody ends up getting cut open or something, somebody gets hit with a garbage can and they start bleeding, or somebody just accidentally gets, you know, the corner of a chair or something catches like their head or whatever splits them open. You have, I think it's either 30 seconds or a minute to end the match. Otherwise they have big fines and this and that. And then I've heard stories about how, the Virginia Athletic Commission, is 1,000 times worse. I know we had there was a commission in Michigan, but you didn't have to have licensing or anything like that. They would just have, like an EMT check you out, make sure your blood pressure or your pulse wasn't super high. And they would look at you and just make sure that you were coherent. And I think that was more than enough. I mean, you don't want anybody dying in the ring. And if you're having somebody just kind of examine you, that's good. But the hoops that they're trying to make you jump through, and it becomes a big money racket, really, with a lot of that stuff. And for certain things, it's probably great for MMA, something like that. You know, that's probably a great idea. But for pro wrestling, I thought it was a bit much. And that was something else. I did a show with the Honk Tonk Man a couple of weeks ago, and he was going on and on about how terrible the athletic commission is in so many different states, and really puts a damper on the wrestling industry and what they allow you to do. And they've also grouped, I don't know if all the states have, but I know, like Kentucky, for example, groups MMA and wrestling in with the same athletic commission. And it's really, it's two different sports. I mean, wrestling is an entertainment, and MMA is, it's a sport that's, you know, pretty brutal. And some people think might be a little overkill on what they're allowed to do in there.
In the state of Washington, there's actually a bill proposed that would separate professional wrestling from MMA. We're in the same situation up here in Washington.
Which would be, perfect. I mean, you don't have baseball and football don't have the same regulations, you know, and nor should something that's a totally different sport.
Agreed. In your career so far, I'm sure you've come across countless different ring announcers, and that's sort of an overlooked aspect of the wrestling business. A lot of promoters don't really put a lot of thought behind their ring announcer, but they end up being the face of the company, and a bad ring announcer can hurt a good show if they don't know what they're doing and the fans can't understand what's happening. They can't understand what the dates are that they need to know to come back to the show and so forth. Who are some of the better ring announcers that you have come across in your career, and who are a few of the people out there currently that you think promoters should look at for helping their shows?
You know, as far as on the independent scene, I couldn't tell you a lot of the different ring announcers, and I've come across some different ones. And like you had said, you know, some are they're fairly good, and some of them are really good, and some of them not so good. And a lot of times, just to keep their budget down, they'll just have whoever will grab a microphone and go up and make announcements. And that's basically almost what they are. I wouldn't even call them ring announcers. There's just, you know, some sort of a little announcement person, I guess. But, you know, a good example of a phenomenal ring announcer, and you saw what MMA with UFC has done with them and used them for the main event, which is Bruce Buffer. And he's taken a job that I think most people thought was, okay, you know, the ring announcer's okay, but he showed that there's so much more that you can do with it and really captivate an audience. And, you know, years before him, Howard Finkel's always been good from the WWE. But the things that you learn about any business, wrestling that we're speaking of, is that every single person that's on the card for whatever they do has a lot of value. There's so much there if each person is doing their job correctly because they're part of the show. Every single person adds something to the show, and so it's important that each one is doing the best of their ability of whatever that job might be.
My understanding is at one point earlier in the 2000s, maybe the late 90s, you had an opportunity to be part of the WCW Cruiserweight division. You had a few matches, I believe, with WCW. Can you tell us what happened with your WCW days?
It was just sort of an out-of-the-blue thing. I got a phone call. Bobby Fulton had referred me, Bobby Fulton Fantastics, referred me to Paul Orndorff was the booker at the time. And Kevin Sullivan was the booker. Paul Orndorff was just handling booking extra talent for the company. And he had called me and asked me if I was interested in coming. I think they were in Dayton, Ohio, and doing some shows. So I said, sure, you know, sounds good. And I ended up doing the thing where the NWO, what they call it, the NWO Hour, whatever it was. They would do like a little segment for 10 minutes or something where we'd go to black and white, and it was before anybody was in the building. And I did a little thing with Big Show, Paul White. He was a giant back then. And then I did another segment with Kevin Sullivan on Nitro. And we had the match, and Kevin was in that big shoot angle with Chris Benoit over his wife. And he was just he was pretty brutal in the ring, but, you know, that's just the way it goes. You just suck it up and go on. But I didn't know what to expect. And after we had the match, Kevin loved it. He said it was great. It was everything that he wanted. He liked my look. And he said, I'm interested in using it. He goes, and I'd like to just, you know, do a character, sign you and do some kind of character with you in the Cruiserweight division. Well, I was ecstatic. I thought, this is great. You know, I didn't even know I was going to get this booking. Now I'm just getting ready to get a job. And it was 2 weeks after that, Kevin Sullivan had got fired, and Terry Taylor had taken over as the new booker. And Terry had no interest in me, which is much like any job. If you go to get a job somewhere in a factory, you know, perhaps the manager of the place who's doing the hiring might be interested in you. And then the next person that comes in that's in charge, they have their own people or their own likings or, you know, different things. And sometimes I think just for principle, they don't like to follow up on something the other person was doing. So if they're in charge now, they say, okay, well, the ideas that the person had before weren't good or they wouldn't have got fired. So we're not interested in that. I got new ideas. Unfortunately for me, the new ideas didn't include me.
Now, obviously WCW at that time had a really big cruiserweight division that they were highlighting. Do you think that the cruiserweight division of WCW would have been something you would have excelled at that point in time in your career?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That was, I'd only been in the business for about 4 years, and I was still very young, hungry, in shape. I'd like to believe I'm still in shape, but a whole lot younger, about 20 years younger then. So much healthier. And, you know, I was had a lot of hunger inside to succeed in the business. And that would have been a great opportunity for a category that was fitting to someone my size in that and was getting so much exposure in the cruiserweight division. And they had such great talents to learn from there. Jericho was there, and Rey Mysterio, and Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero. The list goes on and on. They had all the guys from AAA Wrestling from Mexico, and just a phenomenal list of great guys that were coming through there. And it really, really would have been a great time in my life and a great opportunity. But unfortunately, you know, sometimes these things, you're going one direction and all of a sudden it pushes you another.
You mentioned being in great shape, and you're still in phenomenal shape to this day. What's the diet like for you these days in order to maintain that really tremendous physique that you do have?
Things are a little bit different than when I was younger. I have to do more cardio than what I did. And I don't get away with eating the extra calories that I used to. It's a matter of just tightening your diet down. And anyone that's older knows that when you get from your 20s to your 30s, it changes a little bit from your 30s to your 40s, and you have to start making little adjustments of increasing your cardio, backing down some of your calories. You just have to tighten everything up, but it's not something that can't be achieved. I don't know if anybody follows Al Snow on Twitter or his Instagram or anything like that, but Al is, I believe, in his early 50s now, and he looks the best he's ever looked in his life. He just looks phenomenal. He's jacked and tan. I mean, chiseled. This is the best I think I've ever saw Al at that age. And that happens a lot, too. I see a lot of guys, they pursue something they never achieved, and it's a big goal to say, okay, I want to look better right now at, you know, in Al's case, you know, in his 50s, I want to look better than I did in my 20s. And he does. You got to hand it to him. He's looks unbelievable right now.
One of the things that a lot of wrestlers have ended up incorporating into their regimen in the last couple of years is the DDP yoga. A lot of wrestlers use it to try to overcome injuries. A lot of them use it as a cardio. Some use it more of a conditioning thing if they can't get to gyms on the road. Have you try the DDP yoga, and do you have any opinions on it?
I'll be honest with you, I've not tried it, and I've not researched it a lot. Just the little bit that I have saw, you know, some social media on, and that I thought that it was kind of gimmicky when I first heard about it. And I thought, well, you know, this is just Diamond Dallas Page just trying to promote something, and everyone's trying to hit a different niche or market outside of wrestling to be able to make a living and that. But after hearing the feedback on what he's done with Jake the Snake Roberts, helping to get him back in shape and get him clean where nobody else could do it. I know he's helped Scott Hall and just a handful of other people. It's something that even not knowing anything about it, you know, personally, just from what he's accomplished with it, I would highly recommend it because you can't argue with statistics, that's for sure.
At this point in time, my co-host QT is with us, and I know that he has some questions also, so I'm going to pass things over to QT for a while.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Sean.
Hey, how are you?
Sean, I'd like to wish you a happy Easter right off the bat. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Happy Easter to you, and happy Easter to all the listeners.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Sean, I saw your YouTube video called Former WCW Superstar Sexy Sean Casey, and the opening to this video had the soundtrack of Girls, Girls Girls by Motley Crue. Question is, are you a big fan of Motley Crue, and do you think bass player Nikki Sixx would be a better wrestler than drummer Tommy Lee?
Yes, I'm a huge fan of Motley Crue. It's actually my favorite group, and anybody that's followed my career saw that for the last probably two decades, I've always had a girl or girls that generally go to the ring with me, so it was kind of fitting that would be the theme song that I would always, you know, have several girls or different girls different times that would accompany me to the ring. But as far as Nikki Sixx or Tommy Lee, you know, I'm a bigger fan of Nikki Sixx, but given everything I've saw with Tommy and how outspoken he is and how physical that he's been with cameramen, like when him and Pamela Anderson were together, and all the fights he's been in, I would honestly, even a fan of Nikki Sixx, I would have to go with Tommy Lee if he was going to be between the two on who would be a better wrestler.
Oh, okay. All right. How about a matchup between drummer Tommy Lee versus singer Vince Neil?
Would be interesting. Vince, especially when he's not been dieting or exercising, is probably two or three of what Tommy is. But once again, and also another time where I'm more of a Vince Neil fan than Tommy, but, you know, just calling it as I see it, I would still pick Tommy would be the better wrestler or better fit.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Now, in your YouTube video, Sexy Sean Casey, former WCW superstar, you mentioned Jimi Hendrix at the 39-second mark. Did you know that he was in the 101st Airborne?
No, I didn't.
Yes. He was a paratrooper.
Huh.
Yes.
No, I never knew that.
And part of his experiences, he actually did make some parachute jumps, led to that song, Kiss the Sky.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting.
A proud member of the armed forces. Yes.
Well, good for him. That was awesome. I didn't know.
Oh, okay. Now, you also mentioned Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson as an influence on your career. Did the ring gear that they wear have an influence on you and your hairstyle?
You know, it's interesting because they had a big influence, a huge, huge influence on me. But my original ring gear and hairstyle and that was a product of Flying Brian Pillman, which was the first person that trained me, and the Ultimate Warrior. Now, as a kid growing up, as the Rock, you know, watching the Rockwell Express and that, I was just such a huge fan. I just couldn't get enough of the guys. I knew, and it goes back to what I was saying about the people in the rock bands and in wrestling, and, you know, they were like the first original rock stars there that were wrestlers. They had the girls would just go crazy. I remember a story Ricky Morton was telling me back in the Jim Crockett promotion days. I guess the Crocketts had promoted them, and like in all the 7-Elevens, they had cardboard cutout, like the statue type things inside the little supermarket, not supermarkets, but the little mini mart stores, the gas station type things. And they were just such just larger than life characters. And especially Ricky was so good on the microphone and so good in the ring, and Robert as well, but Ricky, you know, especially the standout. And I just grew up idolizing those guys. I thought, wow, you know, you get in wrestling, and if you could be as good as these guys, you got all the girls, and, you know, all this fame and all this hype and all these fans. And that was, you know, something huge for me. But I was 17 when I first had started training with Flying Brian Pillman, and he had got signed with WCW and was waiting to get his dates to get called up on the road. So he told me ahead of time, he said, I can go ahead and start your training, but, you know, I'm not going to be able to finish it. I said, well, just anything would be great. So we ended up training on a mattress in his mom's backyard. And I thought that was kind of different at first. And then years later, after you read the stories about how Stu Hart trained guys, I just read a book probably about a year ago called The Rise and Fall of Professional Wrestling. And the story of Chris Benoit, and it talks about Bret Hart's dad, Stu Hart, that trained all these guys, including Brian Pillman, and how Stu just had the amateur wrestling, like the high school wrestling mats in his basement and no ropes or anything like that. And, you know, that's what he calls the dungeon. And, you know, there was no ring. These guys learned to bump basically on the ground and bounce off the side of a wall. And that's kind of how Brian was doing my training. We're in his mom's backyard on a mattress. And it didn't make sense at the time, but makes total sense now. That's how he was trained. But getting back to what you were saying about the outfit, I had the turquoise zebra stripe trunks, much like Brian had the orange ones from when he played for the Bengals, the Cincinnati Bengals. And then my hair was similar to his. It was kind of curly and kind of teased up on top, I guess you might say. And then I used to tie all the different strings on me, like the Ultimate Warrior. So it was kind of like a blend. As much as I loved and idolized the Rocco Express, my outfit and everything was a cross between Ultimate Warrior and Flying Braun Pillman.
Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. Now, you mentioned that you had read about Stu Hart. He was a man that kept himself in fantastic shape well into his older years. Stu Hart kind of reminds me of Jack LaLanne. Are you familiar with Jack LaLanne of the 40s and 50s?
I am.
One of the first persons that had a TV show devoted to fitness.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, I've not actually saw the show, but I know I'm very familiar with who he is.
Yeah, he could do like 70 push-ups when he was 70 years old.
Wow. That's something to do when you're 27 years old. I don't know anybody that's probably doing 70 at 27, let alone 70.
Yes, he changed his diet when he was a teenager. He cut out all sugars and went pretty much to strictly the only meat or animal product that he ate for decades was fish. And I think he may have thrown in a little bit of shrimp there, but it was mostly fruits, nuts, and vegetables and rice. And he had a 32-inch waist for decades. Jack LaLanne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was well ahead of his time. Well, well ahead of
his time. All right, well, now you coined the term rock star wrestler, wrestling rock star, at the 56-second mark in that video. Have you yourself ever been in a band?
You know, it's something I always wanted to do, and I never got to. When I was in high school, I had a friend that was going to sell me his guitar, and he said, go ahead and take it home for a couple weeks and, you know, see if you like it. And if so, then you can buy it from me, and if not, you know, I'll take it back. It's not a big deal. Well, I tried and I just couldn't, my fingers wouldn't go in the right place. And I didn't have anybody actually teaching me. And some people can just, you know, they're almost like self-taught. They can just pick it up and go. And I knew that wasn't for me. I just, you know, if someone would have taught me lessons, I knew that I wasn't going to pick it up and be like that. And then years later, I thought, you know, I would rather even be, the lead singer, you know, the front man for a band would be so nice, but I don't have a voice to sing. So, but it's interesting because you realize what it's like when you're on the microphone in front of a crowd and the way you can control people's emotions and things like that with your promos and the direction of what you're saying there. And you see so much the similarities of what it is to be the lead singer. And when the lead singer tells people to, you know, hold their lighters up, put their lighters down, stand up, sit down, clap, you know, the whole bit. And that's pretty much what you're doing in professional wrestling when you're on the microphone. So there's so much similarities there that had I had a voice, I would have loved to have done it and believe I would have been a good frontman for a band.
Have you ever been to a Fozzy concert with Chris Jericho as frontman?
No, I've not.
Oh, okay.
but I can imagine it's pretty good.
Yes. I always really enjoyed when he was on Monday Night Raw and ZZ Top was host and Chris Jericho came up to him and said, yeah, I've always been a great admirer of your music. Have you heard of our band Fozzy? And ZZ Top got this puzzled look on their faces. Yes. Fozzie, who they seem to be thinking. Yes. Well, now, Sean, Cartman of South Park formed the Christian band Faith Plus One with Butters Scotch Leopold on drums and Token on bass. Have you ever thought of setting up a projector at ringside and playing some of Faith Plus One's as your entrance music?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
maybe that's
okay.
That's something that maybe I should look into.
Yes. Now Rush, the famous Canadian band, when they did, I believe, their last tour or the tour before that, they had a South Park clip where Cartman was playing keyboards like Geddy Lee. It was pretty funny.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I didn't saw that one either.
Well, Sean, when Cartman formed the Christian rock band Faith Plus One, he did so because the original band he was with, Moop, Kyle and Kenny, couldn't decide on a musical direction. Now, that argument about their musical direction was so intense that, of course, Cartman did form Faith Plus One. And did you know that their song, Faith Plus One song, Three Times My Savior, is based on the song Three Times My Lady by Lionel Richie?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, it is, yes.
Interesting. Like I said, I've not saw it, so that's something I'm definitely going to have to YouTube and check out.
Oh, okay. All right. And now I'm sure I know the answer to this, but their song, I Wasn't Born Again Yesterday, is based on I've Never Been to Me by Charlene.
Hmm.
And Jesus Baby is based on Didn't I Blow Your Mind by the Delphonics.
Hmm. See, they just took a little twist of everything, huh?
Yes. They just took a Christian song and filled in stuff with a pen like Baby and Jesus. And Cartman just filled in those words. Yes.
Well, I bet that's really funny then to watch.
All right. Well, Sean, do you have any road trip stories with Jimmy Wang Yang?
I have several. Probably one of the most noted one was really wasn't – it was more like a personal trip that turned into a wrestling type thing. We went to the Adult Video Awards in Vegas 1 year, and we had – I don't know if you guys are familiar that I posed for Playgirl on two different occasions, and it just happened to be the time that we were in Vegas for these Adult Video Awards that they have, like the porn stars have their own booths and things like that. And a lot of them are big wrestling fans. And we had a guy that was going around and introducing us to everybody. And him and Mick Foley are big, big fans of Christy Canyons from Playboy Radio. And so we ended up going in there and started talking to her and talking about how, you know, she's Mick's favorite and this and that, you know. And I wound up doing Playboy Radio there with Jimmy. Jimmy didn't end up getting on the radio with me, but he was right there next to me while we were doing the little segment there for Playboy Radio. But as far as, like, a wrestling story with wrestling, I'm trying to think of something that would be good, something that would stand out. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything right now. There's so many different stories that because Jimmy lives here in Cincinnati with me, and he's a good friend of mine. So there's probably a ton of different Jimmy Wang Yang stories, but I don't know about wrestling ones.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, in that video that I mentioned, you also mentioned Billy Gunn and John Morrison as an influence. Did you know that Jim Morrison of the Doors, his dad was at one point a captain in the Navy, and he was commanding officer of the aircraft carrier Bonham Richards?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes. Okay, which leads to my next question. In your opinion, could Shark Boy rise to the rank of commander, one rank below captain, and thus be commanding officer of a naval frigate? Shark Boy.
I don't know, but I would imagine he makes a good seaman.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Because I did see your match with Shark Boy and enjoyed it immensely. Yes.
Did you? Okay. Yeah, he's a great guy and a really good talent.
Okay, now was that the only time you wrestled Shark Boy, that one time?
Oh, no. I've had several matches with Shark Boy all the way back to, this is back another one of those mid-90s stories. Probably after the, I believe it was around after the WCW stuff and before I started wrestling for WWF and was in OVW the second time and so forth. We had many different feuds when they had first put the Shark Boy gimmick on him. And we had tag matches with him. We had, I've had singles matches, several different ones with HWA when he was working for them. And that was originally where the gimmick came from when he was in there. And Les Thatcher was the owner at the time.
Wow. Okay. All right. Okay, well, in that video, at the 3 minute and 42 second mark, you mentioned that you shared locker rooms with Randy Orton, Batista, Brock Lesnar, and at the time, you didn't quite know the pool of talent that you were around, and that you would see these guys in tractor trailers as you were going through various towns on the independent circuits. It's kind of like what Rush went through back in mid-74, when they were playing with what was their opening act with Kiss and Savoy Brown. You just didn't quite realize the amount of talent there right before Kiss hit it big.
And you never really know that. I mean, you know, I'm sure a lot of guys in college, you know, they play college football, for instance, with guys that, you know, you see so much talent that you don't foresee what, 5-10 years later may bring for that talent. You know, they're good talent, but you don't realize that they're going to be the star quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers one day or something like that. And with Brock and John Cena and Randy Orton and Batista and all these guys, you knew they were great talents, but you know, the idea of thinking that they're going to be on the side of the tractor trailers for the WWE just doesn't really, it doesn't click with you at the time of what it is, but excuse me, there's that potential that's there all the time, and you just don't know until it happens with a lot of things in life.
Wow, okay. All right, well said. All right, well, you said in the video that you did some Chippendales dancing, and I'm sure you have seen the now legendary Saturday Night Live skit of Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley at a Chippendales tryout. Have you indeed seen this video?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the classics of all time. That is so, so funny.
Well, my question is, how would you have liked to share a Chippendales stage with Chris Farley?
Oh, that would have been great. If I could have done that, then I guess that would have made me Patrick Swayze.
Well, did you know Chris Farley did play football in high school? So he did come from an athletic background. Yes.
And, you know, I think much like wrestling is different things like actors and so forth, and it becomes gimmicky. Even though he wasn't in good shape, you know, for him to all of a sudden get in good shape, wasn't the market for him. The worse shape that he was in and the more sloppy his personality was, that was his gimmick. So even if he had that, and I've never met him or had not met him, you know, before he passed, but you don't know. Like if he's, you know, completely breaks character, maybe he was a very pulled together, you know, well-to-do, or at least he was at one time, I guess, and somewhat athletic, but that's not what would have made him money. And so, you know, he didn't really embrace that or was told not to anyway.
Yes, I agree with that. Okay. All right. Well said. Okay. Well, Sean, are there any truth to the rumors that you were seen on St. Paddy's Day drinking Jameson whiskey with Dean Ambrose in a Cincinnati bar?
Yeah, we did a skit for WWE for Dean Ambrose. Not only that, he was back home in Cincinnati, and and he was drinking with some of his friends. We were in there with a good friend of mine and Five Most Wanted brother, Cody Hawk. And that's who trained Dean Ambrose when he was John Moxley. And, you know, we also had several matches in the HWA. And he kind of was an honorary Five Most Wanted member in our group. So we did our little skit there, and it was the whole theme was it was St. Patrick's Day, and Dean was back hanging out in one of the local bars, which is actually a bar that he used to hang out on. I believe it was Wednesday nights. There was a couple different little clubs that was around the corner there, but when he wanted to get away with a few of the friends and just be out of, you know, so much of a crowd, and that that was one of the bars he used to hang out in. And so he had told production that's where he wanted to shoot this scene that they were wanting to do. He thought it would be fitting just to go back to a place he used to hang out in. And then so they had brought us in as, you know, his friends and that, and we're sort of hanging out in the bar, and, you know, he's promoting that he's back in town, getting ready for the show, you know, that night for SmackDown. And then, of course, the ending part of the promo is him talking about his match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. But yeah, that was a neat little thing we'd just done. I guess it's been a week or two ago. And Cody and myself, Dean had some on his Twitter and his website, which I'm off the top of my head, I'm not sure what it is, but had some different pictures that had us all in there from the scene that was filmed for SmackDown.
Wow. All right. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. So you were in the bar. Very good. All right, I'm going to check that out. Now, Sean, we at Turnbuckle Turmoil have a homework assignment folder that we give our interviewees, and we give them a homework assignment. And I also have a section marked homework assignments completed. Now, I'd like to give you a choice homework assignment. You can. One of them is to look up Jack LaLanne, do a Wikipedia search on him, and you can read about how he kept himself in shape well into his 70s and 80s. That would be one assignment. Or you could have the choice of looking up Jesus Baby by the Cartman rock group Faith Plus One, and you can compare Butters Leopold Scotch's drumming to that of Tommy Lee. And tell Turnbuckle Turmoil what you think.
Okay, I think I'll go with the Jack LaLanne one.
wait, you're going to go with what?
With the Jack LaLanne one.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to mark that down, that Jack LaLanne. Okay. And if you could, maybe send Turnbuckle Turmoil or a sign guy or myself what you think of this pioneering fitness guru, some comments, we would appreciate that, and we would know that you completed your homework assignment.
Okay, absolutely.
Wow, all right, okay. Oh, and one last question before I turn it back over to Sign Guy. Do they have a Playgirl Mansion?
A Playgirl Mansion? Well, not that I'm aware of, but we like to believe that the one I live in was kind of like a naughty mansion.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. All right, well, good talking with you, Sean, and back to you, Sign Guy. Yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, QT. Well, Sean, I know that over your career, you've had several different valets come to the ring with you. I'm sure there's been a wide variety of experience levels and skill levels. Valets and managers have been downplayed in the major promotions for the last several years. On the independents, it's kind of hit or miss what sort of training, if any, a valet or a manager will receive before going out to the crowds. What do you see on the independent level as far as quality of managers and valets, and do you think that there's still a place for them in this day and age on the bigger stages of professional wrestling?
I absolutely do. I'm not a big fan of what WWE does with the valets, which is they try to get the most mileage they can by making them all professional wrestlers, which there's nothing wrong with. But they do that, and they seem like that's all they're interested in doing. And then managers, you know, as a way of saving money, I think Vince McMahon has just said, hey, let's just do away with having any managers. But see, years ago when you had really big guys to help get them over, you had the managers do the talking for them that were so charismatic. I think there's still an art in that, and I think it's still needed. And that's something I'd like to see come back. As far as the valets is essential, and I believe that that's something else that needs to come back, because having the girls' matches are great, but having all the girls only be wrestlers and really hardly be valets, I always believed that the girls were great for the eye candy. And, you know, in today's day and age, you even have some of them that can talk really good. But, you know, if you have I always resort back to, like, the Four Horsemen type stuff. What a better group to have, like, Baby Doll there as the eye candy. J.J. Dillon doing a lot of the talking, not that somebody like Flair or Arn or anybody needed him to talk for them. But, you know, you have, like, the guy that's supposed to be the advisor, the veteran advisor of, you know, their business decisions and whatnot. But there's so much there that is that market that was once used strongly and doesn't anymore. And that's something I would really like to see brought back. I would like to find myself in that kind of spot one day and have, you know, a really pretty piece of eye candy that, you know, maybe accompanies the guy or the tag team that might go to the ring. And especially if these guys are really, really good in the ring, but they just lack having a lot of charisma to do promos. If you have a manager that does that, then you're covering all the bases.
One of the big hot button issues in professional wrestling in the last several years has been the issue of concussions. We've learned a lot about the long-term effects and what they mean in the last few years. The larger companies especially have been very sensitive to their athletes getting concussions. On the independent level, do you think that anything needs to be done to protect the independent wrestlers when it comes to concussions, or do you think it's up to the individual wrestler themselves to kind of monitor if they get a concussion? Do you think promoters need to play a role in that? What's your opinion on this subject?
I would like to have them be able to see something, but, you know, without going, you would almost have to be monitored all the time to really know if you have a concussion, or if nobody sent them in to get looked at, then the guy would have to take it upon himself, which, you know, is a lot of expensive doctor bills that these guys don't have the money for. And even with the athletic commission, you know, that's just something else to add more pressure from the athletic commission. And from an independent standpoint, you know, it's not something that should be overlooked, but at the same time, without having any kind of health care covered, it puts the guys in a tough spot there. And really, that's something that they almost have to take it upon themselves, that if they're having problems with headaches and different signs that they might have a concussion, to get looked at themselves. But, you know, the good news there is that nobody's going to be pushing them to wrestle like what has been the problem in the past with a lot of these guys. I know they said that was one of CM Punk's reasonings, that he supposedly had gotten fired because he had refused to go out and wrestle. And I'm not sure what the actual truth is behind, you know, what actually happens, because, you know, there's always three sides to every story. But with that, you know, you if it is, if there's any truth to it, you won't be being pushed that you have to go wrestle. You'll be able to take the time off you need. So these guys don't continue with furthering their concussions or creating, you know, more problems. And there's so much talk about the different things that's affecting people's brains and that with concussions. So it's something definitely not to take lightly.
Absolutely. Well, we have just a few minutes left on the show, so I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say today to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you would like, social medias, upcoming shows, merchandise, favorite bakery, whatever it is you would like to plug, floor is all yours.
Okay. Feel free to look me up on Facebook. If I don't add you right away, if you send me a friend's request, right now I'm at my limits, so sometimes the friends fall off or get deleted or whatever, and I'll add each listener, you know, as soon as it's available for me to continue adding more friends on there. But please look me up on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at @OneRealSeanCasey. My Instagram, which I just actually got working. I don't have any pictures up on it yet, but feel free to follow me on there. I'll be posting a lot of stuff soon. You can also Google me, Sean Casey. You can put in Sean Casey WWE, WWF, anything like that. We'll pull up information about me. And upcoming shows, if you just follow my social media, you'll see that. We got a few shows here in a couple weeks. They'll be in Vegas next weekend. We're in Port Huron, Michigan. And we have a list of other things coming up. So feel free to follow me on social media, and that'll give you the play-by-play of what my schedule's like.
All right. Well, Sexy Sean Casey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. I appreciate you taking time out of your Sunday to be with us. Happy Easter to you once again, and hopefully we'll get to do this again down the road before too long.
Yes, thank you so much. Happy Easter once again to you and all the listeners, and I appreciate you having me today, and definitely look forward to something in the future.
All right, fans, happy Easter once again, and if you get the opportunity to see Sexy Sean Casey at a show near you, definitely take advantage. Great talent, and we will be back with you next week. We'll talk to you then.